Welcome to the Activation Podcast, brought to you by the Conscious Resistance Network. I'm your host, Derek Brose, and every episode of the Activation Podcast is going to explore solutions that I've written about and that I've talked about through my 10 years as a journalist and an activist. And we're also going to talk with interesting guests who are bringing you the most cutting-edge solutions in the areas of health, permaculture, technology, community organizing, and anything else that we could come across. Thank you for being here with me. Let's get started.
Welcome to the fifth episode of the Activation Podcast. My name is Derek Brose, and today we are bringing another exciting guest, someone who I've had the pleasure of sort of getting to know through the digital world, but hopefully today we'll get to know in a more detailed fashion. I'd like you to welcome to the show Kelly Brogan. How are you doing?
Doing all right. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk with you because, as I said, we've got to interact, and I've been appreciating your work, and I know you're aware of my work, and this will be a good time to kind of really get deeper, I think. And before we do that, I just wanted to give you an opportunity, rather than me read your bio or something like that, let you go ahead and just introduce yourself and your credentials or your work in whatever fashion you choose.
Cool. That's super refreshing. Thank you. I always take a nap during the bio part of an interview. But yeah, I think it's really relevant that I was a card-carrying Matrix participant up until about 11 years ago. I have an MD, and I specialize in what's called reproductive psychiatry. So I actually specialize, believe it or not, in medicating with psychotropics pregnant and breastfeeding women. I was one of the first 300 in the world to perceive that as a needed specialty. And it was actually my own health challenge, I guess. It wasn't so much even a crisis, but it was a challenge that began my journey of awakening to, what I would consider the truth about the Church of Medicine and allopathic medicine specifically. And the journey really brought me into a very dark realm of activism, like angry, righteous activism that I later began to understand as a part of my spiritual healing process and individuation process from some old childhood patterns. And I began to see this in all of the women that I worked with, because at that time I had dedicated my practice to tapering women off of all medications, but chiefly psychotropics, and did that for 10 years. And the process of individuation is still ongoing, as we all try to understand what emotional, psychological, bodily sovereignty actually looks like in lived practice. And so that's a lot of my focus these days, is really doing my best to walk the walk in my life and turn over all those stones I'd rather not look under. But my pharmaceutical activism, so to speak, of course, then began to extend itself into other areas. And I have been, on some level, enjoying the front row view I've had to the pandemic because of my conventional medical training. And then I did have formal training, but also my experiential training in natural medicine and holistic healing and health reclamation, just to see it from both sides and to really be able to play in this game, because I know how to read a scientific study and I know, what a PCR test is and all these things, has been really something. So it's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so I appreciate that. And we're going to get into a lot of the different areas you touched on, because you have multiple backgrounds. Like you said, you have sort of the kind of mainstream allopathic medicine view, as well as bringing in these other elements. But before we get into some of those solutions, because I think that clearly the conversation of COVID and the way that your work has been affected by it, as well as myself and others, being kind of deleted and censored and banned, is also a part of the conversation. We're here to talk about solutions, but we can't really talk about the solutions without acknowledging what's happening here. Yeah. And to that point, you yourself, among the other part of the disinformation dozen, have been targeted heavily. And, I sort of say that in a joking way, but obviously this is a very realistic attack on you, your work, your livelihood, your family. Could you talk a little bit about that for those who are unfamiliar with that situation and just how that's been affecting you?
So there is a list that is seemingly arbitrary to me, actually. Why are you not on the list, for example? A list of 12 folks who are thought to account for I forget what it is, something like 60% of the misinformation or something ridiculous like that, that is out there, right? And that there is a orchestrated campaign to, you know, it ranges from to, you know, remove us from all platforms, social media platforms, all the way to press criminal charges. And this is just part of the playbook. This kind of thing never really gets me going. You know, if you want to get me upset, you know, have say or look at me wrong one morning and I'll, you know, my whole day is ruined, you know, but this kind of thing, it's funny to me. It really doesn't scare me. Doesn't upset me because I know that it's a part of the Aikido like practice of really being discerning around where I put my energy. Right. So I've made the point many times that this is their sandbox, right? Facebook and Instagram, it's their sandbox. All of these, you know, monolithic corporate entities pulling the strings behind these seemingly independent corporate structures. Are we really going to waste our energy insisting that they play? I know I'm preaching to the choir, but insisting that they play by our rules? That's what they want us to do, right? They want to capture our vital force in that endless dialectic. So, you know, I think this is really, you know, I'm not a tech person necessarily, but this is really a moment, obviously, for this new reality to be born and for us to not shed too many tears over the fact that they, you know, would like to control the narrative completely in these pre-existing platforms. And it's also not my first rodeo. You know, I put out a book in 2016 called A Mind of Your Own, and I received a very sizable advance, shocking advance with HarperCollins. And it was their lead book for the spring in 2016. And I told them, I said, you know, just so you know, I'm probably not going to be welcome on the Dr. Oz show and Today Show and Nightline and all these shows that you normally waltz your, you know, feature authors onto, because I have an exploding pharmaceutical pill on the cover of this book and they are 70% pharma subsidized. And, you know, so that's exactly what happened. The book was totally blacklisted. I mean, literally not a word about it. And interestingly, because of a grassroots, you know, largely Sayer led support, you know, through independent media, it ended up making the New York Times list, which is so incoherent and bizarre to me still to this day. But we sold tons and tons of copies. And it was sort of like an early taste of the fact that we can do it, you know, without a single mention from, you know, Dr. Oz himself or whatever. And so I'm excited actually about what it means. And for me, it's a game, you know, and that doesn't mean that I don't have moments of great existential angst about what's happening. Trust me. But that layer of it is a distraction, I think.
Yeah. And I want to just, before we go further, I want to say that my partner, she loves your book. She was reading it and we were traveling somewhere and then it got misplaced on a taxi. So she just recently reordered it, but she loves it. So thank you for that work. And I'm glad to hear you sort of take it in stride, because you're right. Like there's really not much reason other than to point and say, hey, look, these crazy people are doing crazy things. There's no reason to be surprised or kind of like, oh, they're kicking us off their platforms. They're calling to censor us. We know that they want to control the conversation. And, you know, that's been ongoing for a while. It's obviously increasing around COVID. And I think that's honestly, like you were saying earlier, with your background and sort of your feet in both, you know, areas as far as holistic health and maybe more, you know, traditional Western medicine, you have a perspective that maybe some other folks can't offer, right? So that could lend credibility to your message and get more people willing to listen. And so I think that's one of the reasons they would want to target someone such as yourself. But it's good to hear that you haven't really let that affect you too much. But I do want to say, it seems like your work over the last year, like from what I've seen from my perspective from a distance, that you've kind of become more hyper-focused on not being afraid, I think. Is that accurate to say? Like, do you feel like you've kind of taken on a new sense of courage, or you know, like you said, you're just like, well, this isn't really going to affect me. I'm just going to keep doing my work. Like, has it affected the way you go about your work in any ways? Like, obviously you're not self-censoring, but has it encouraged you to push on further?
That's a really interesting question, because I think that a lot of so-called activists have very specific kinds of childhood wounds, right? And so when people would say to me, oh, you're so courageous, you know, whatever, back when 8 years ago or something, to do what you're doing or stand up around vaccines and you could destroy your entire career. And And it never, ever has felt like courage. It's felt almost like a compulsion, you know, like if I don't say what I have to say or write what I have to write or record whatever video or write whatever book, that would be painful for me, right? So it's not so much that I experienced courage there. And I used to be very nihilistic. I used to be an atheist. And I really felt like, bring it. If I die, I die. Who cares? And as I have brought my heart online, largely, you know, thanks to my relationship with Sayer, but also through personal work and my children, I have come to really deeply love life and love living. And so interestingly, I only began to sort of feel like, oh, wow, like, do I need to lock my door? Kind of a thing. You know, what are these boundaries I should have? You know, what would they look like? You know, somewhat recently in my life. But I wouldn't say that I don't experience fear of bodily processes. For whatever my, you know, experience of awakening from conventional medicine and my work with my mentor, Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, afforded me, I am never afraid, almost to a compassion, you know, leeching fault, right? I'm never afraid about the body. I don't get scared of illness. I don't get scared if my kids are sick. I don't get scared if my friend is sick. I don't get scared of any diagnosis. So that can't capture me. And that's one of the, you know, the deep gifts of stepping into a field of belief that says everything that happens with your body is a message from you to you about you. It is here for you to decode. There's nothing to be afraid of. Your body is doing exactly what it needs to be doing, right? The fear that I have experienced was very recent. And I caught myself quickly because if I have a dedication, you know, right now in my work, in my personal, you know, development, it's to the resolution of victim consciousness, because I do believe that to be the only human pathology is when we take the bait of understanding ourselves to be powerless, helpless, and dependent as adults, right? We carry that child consciousness into our adult life. And I like so many, I'm guessing, who have been exposed to this concept of vaccine shedding, which is a misnomer, you know, transmission, let's say, from the experimentally injected population to the uninjected population. They got us, right? It's like the brilliant, great inversion of contamination psychology, right? Because if you don't believe that the body is vulnerable to random forces of bad germs out there that could invade you, multiply, and kill you, if you don't happen to believe that, which many people don't, it's a belief. That's why it's called germ theory. You can still get caught, you know, because you're probably not masking and not vaccinating. And what happens when maybe social media is seeded with these stories, or maybe they're authentic and organic stories, who knows? What happens when we begin to understand that there is a signal of harm to those who are even in the vicinity, just like germ theory? It's the same thing, right? So I was at the gym recently, where I do this boot camp class, and it's partnered. And I had this lovely partner, female partner, and she was super sweet. And she was cleaning off one of the weighted medicine balls or whatever. And she told the guy behind her she was almost done. And he said, oh, don't worry about it. And she says, oh, okay, well, I'm vaccinated. So, and I was like, I found myself afraid of whatever her sweat getting on me was going to do to my body. And I caught myself, you know, because this is my jam, you know, I caught myself and I said, what? That's the psychology that we are being invited to step beyond, out of fear of the body, into trust of the body, into an experience of resiliency. And I knew, okay, it's time to level up. It's time to level up physically, time to level up psychologically, and it's time to level up spiritually. And, you know, I've spent a lot of the past week or so actually researching things like psychic self-defense, you know, and how it is that I can work with my energy management so that I am not capturable in that fear realm.
I love the way you put that. Yeah. And I want to probe further on the, you know, the uninjected versus the injected in just a moment, but I want to go back just a little bit because you talked earlier about, you know, previously being an atheist, and you kind of mentioned this as well when you spoke at the first Greater Reset back at the end of January during your talk with Sire, and you were kind of hinting at how, like, you weren't really raised or, it, you know, didn't experience, you know, in your growing years, a kind of spirituality or even really a deeper understanding of love, and maybe are still kind of looking for that understanding, but came from more of the rational, maybe materialistic, reductionist kind of background. Can you talk more about how like what that journey has been like for you, you know, going from an atheist to however you would describe yourself today?
That's a really a good distillation, because I think this is not uncommon, right? I was raised, my dad was is the right tense, Catholic, right? And my mom was an atheist, still is. And so I was raised in this household where I was expected to go to church and expected to, you know, be confirmed, which is actually the kind of tween age elective induction into, you know, Christianity. And I decided not to do that. I didn't want to do it because already I had taken the bait of this secular materialism, right? And I began to see that as the truth. And the illusion, of course, is how a Shaolin monk with all of his decades of meditating could still believe in the PSYOP and choose to get injected, you know, and shut down his temple, you know, because of COVID and whatever. Like, how it is that these deeply spiritual beliefs or religious beliefs even can coexist with these very secular fears, compliance, and obedience with, you know, the control grid that actually seeks to shut down all of those alternative belief systems, is because the real church, you know, that I was raised in without my parents even knowing it, is the church of scientism, right? Is that cult of belief that says what is measurable, provable, and told to us from on high, you know, whether it's the government, medical authorities, or just your local doctor, that trumps all. You know, that's why we have the Dalai Lama dripping polio vaccines into children's mouths and, you know, eating lamb because his doctor told him to. I mean, there's more to that story. But, you know, because he's not actually Buddhist, he's a scientism practitioner, you know, and maybe he's a Luciferian or whatever else. But the recognition that conventional medicine, allopathic medicine, and science as practiced in this declarative, you know, sort of proclamation-based way, not as a process of inquiry and discovery of the natural world, okay, as really a method of controlling the people. This is a religion, and I'm sure I don't need to convince you of that, but we have been, you know, deluded into thinking that it is actually the opposite. There is religion and then there's science, right? But the belief in the dogma, consensus, the assumptions, and this operationalizing of science as the only permissible dominant orthodoxy is even beyond religion. It's cult-like behavior. And that's also why we see, you know, the dissidents and the heretics maligned and silenced and maybe worse, is because that's not actually how you deal with differences in perspective in the scientific realm. That's how you deal with, you know, those who would challenge the power of occult practices. So, you know, I am always looking at this, because I also know now, or I believe now, that the New Age, much of which I myself have been conditioned around, right? Because I awoke, and when you wake up, the heinous nature of what you perceive is so crushing that many of us feel like we'd rather leave. You know, it's a hopelessness that is induced when you really see what you were previously unwilling to see. And that's why so many of us reach for spiritual practices and meditation and, you know, retreats and plant medicine and all the rest. And one of the first things that I reached for, you know, through a very dear friend of mine, was Kundalini yoga and associated meditation. And I am, you know, deeply baked in the New Age at this point, you know, for the past decade. And I have come to understand that the New Age perspective is very much engineered to encourage us to believe in transcendence from the human body, in the objectification of this human machine, right? Like, it's just an object. Take care of it like you take care of a car, right? And that's why we see so many, maybe all that I can think of, you know, spiritual gurus out on the scene with, you know, big followings and Oprah endorsed and all the rest, you know, shilling for pharma right now. And it's not all because, I don't think, they're co-opted or they have a gun to their, you know, back or whatever. it's because they've marinated in this belief system that encourages them to see God as, and oneness as, somehow outside of the body. The body is not sacred. It is not an animated dimension of your soul. It's just something that needs to be managed, and better safe than sorry. So, you know, I've come to really hold even a lot of my New Age proclivities with some circumspection at this point, and to really understand that we may be charged with developing a new kind of spirituality, the likes of which has maybe been foreseen by somebody like Rudolf Steiner, but for the most part hasn't yet exist. This balanced perspective of, you know, the becoming through the body, right? The contact with divinity and the sacred through this body. And how do we marry the two? So that's really been what I have oriented around, is how do I stay focused on self-care? That's a big, if I have one advocacy, it's self-care, you know, the rituals of caring for this body organism, honoring it. And then also really looking at the ways in which we violate and self-abandon through, you know, the longing for peace, approval, and avoidance of suffering, right? So if we can be aware and also exercise discernment, then we're going to find ourselves continually in a place of self-ownership and hopefully personal empowerment and sovereignty, you know.
So many good nuggets of wisdom in there. A couple of things that I'll comment on. You know, it's interesting you talk about being steeped in, you know, kind of the New Age and how that term gets thrown around. And you're correct. There's definitely, as you know, I'm sure many of my listeners are aware of the various New Age agendas. And I also think that there's sometimes a lack of nuance in that conversation, as far as people who are maybe come from a Christian perspective, that things that they don't understand or that don't look like their beliefs, they automatically must be satanic. They must be New Age. That must be evil. I come from indigenous perspective, and I definitely know that some of the traditions and the customs and the ceremonies that we have, if there was some Western Christian mind to view them, they might, you know, have that kind of perspective, but it's more coming from a lack of understanding. So I do think, like, there's clearly an agenda, as you said, to kind of, it's like you have it both ways, where the body is not good enough, humans aren't good enough, let's evolve to be AI and just shed these weak, petty human beings. Or, you know, there is enlightenment, but it's outside of your body. And so there's just so many mixed messages, right, going on in that space. And at the same time, like, I still do see, you know, when I went to prison, meditation is what saved me. Meditation kept me sane, helped me kind of get through that, get to the roots of my trauma. And there's lots of benefits of these practices, of course. And you mentioned, like, you know, people pursuing plant medicine and different modalities. And I'm not here to kind of say one is better or worse than the other. I think people just need to be skeptical and be discerning of your own beliefs and the things that you're surrounding yourself, like you were talking about. And what came to my mind when you were talking about that is the topic of spiritual bypassing, of how many different people who, like, let's say they come from either an atheist perspective, or they were, you know, like myself, they tried to raise us Christian, but it just didn't take. And then, so I decided to go look out for myself. And I read the Satanic Bible. I read every book I could get my hands on, because I wanted to learn about everything. And then I realized that my parents just wanted to get me to believe what they wanted, not really get me to believe, you know, my own self. But it kind of pushed me in the total opposite direction. And I think there's folks who probably have that experience where they would, you know, oh, I'm spiritual, but not religious. And then in that process, they start to use these different modalities as a way to actually escape some of that deeper work. So could you talk a little bit about that, and just the concept of spiritual bypassing and any of your experience with that?
Yes, I that's a real trigger for me still. And actually, I've had a lot of challenges in interpersonal relationships in my real life, you know, girlfriends and, you know, even dynamics and groups and stuff here in my life that are really predicated on my aversion to the notion that we, knowing better, aware, let's say, of, you know, what it is through an informed consent model to, you know, take an antibiotic or accept a injection or whatever it is. And then to say, oh, but I'll just, you know, I'm just going to alchemize it inside myself with some mantra and sage and whatever. What you abdicate when you're not real with yourself and you don't actually do what it is that you say you'd like to do, which is fine, by the way, we all have moments of deep fear. We all make mistakes. But to then align with the so-called aggressor, right? Because we probably all heard of that triangle, the, you know, the victim, the savior, and the persecutor, and it has different names sometimes. But when you align, let's say, with a medical system, you enable your own self-abuse as an adult. And when you defend that, right? Like, I have a friend who was chose to go to the hospital, and then was talking about what angels there were in the hospital and how grateful she is. And she was wrong to be so critical of, you know, Western medicine before. And to me, the fear of her own mortality, which is, of course, something we all have to grapple with, the acknowledgement that there isn't really a well-rooted belief in her body's own capacity to make sense out of whatever symptoms were arising. And the defense of the system and saying, oh, well, I needed help and they were here to help me. And then, of course, who becomes the persecutor is people like me, you know, who are going to point out, you know, potentially, or hold a mirror and say, you know what, like, you could, next time you could do this on your own. You're safe. You're healthy. Your body is fine. And the fear that came up that you were going to die, that fear is in you. It's been in you for decades. And if you don't want to feel it, because you think the feeling of the fear is actually what's going to kill you, that's your prerogative. But own that, at least, right? Because when we collude with the aggressor, we are enabling our own abuse and trauma, but as adults. And this is the same if you're in an abusive relationship, or, you know, have some other toxic dynamic in the workplace or whatever it is. We revisit the resonance of our childhood traumas of violation, for example, abandonment, rejection, whatever it is. And the challenge is, how can we respond differently? How can we learn how to feel the feelings that come up, right? What are those feelings? They're usually terror related. They're huge, huge energetic fields. And if we simply bypass that, if we simply sprinkle fairy dust on it, if we make excuses and we lie to ourselves, which is really what we're doing in those moments, the universe is going to conspire to offer you yet another opportunity to visit with that resonance. And I have myriad examples of things I was not ready to deal with until I was ready to deal with them. Literally, until that day, the day before, I was not ready. So it's not to judge or condemn. It's simply to acknowledge that the shadow realms of our, personalities, of our defenses, are how we not only injure each other, but also how we induce our own suffering. And that's what I finally have gotten to the point in my life where I recognize that anytime I am pointing a finger at someone, anytime I am judging someone and saying, don't do this, you shouldn't do this, this should be this way, there is some aspect of me that I am projecting out there, because it's easier to judge it out there than it is to own the fact that I actually have that very same quality, right? And, you know, I'll give you a quick example. I just watched this like 5-hour YouTube. Why it's still on YouTube is very suspicious to me. But about, you know, the sort of like Freemason, Luciferian connection, all this stuff. And I was able to reflect on, you know what? There is a part of me that has a great degree of intolerance and impatience for weakness, for perceived fragility, laziness, you know, sloppiness, ineptitude, you know, non-productivity in others, where I feel like, ugh, disgust sometimes. And, you know, this could be anyone in my life. But the truth is, right, and that's at the root of eugenics. Right? Like that feeling. I actually have been an entire campaign in around like 2016 or 17 was, astroturfed around me being an ableist, right? I never heard the term before. And when I looked into it, I said, you know what? They're right. I find my critics are almost always, there's almost always a grain of truth, right? They're right. I am an ableist. I feel like everyone can heal themselves. Everyone can have a home birth. Everyone can do all these things, you know, that I have witnessed are possible, maybe whether or not I've actually done them myself, right? But at the root of that is something that can be very dark and ultimately is a kind of exacting standard of self-punitive energy, right? Because it's really myself I feel that way about. Like, come on, Kelly, like, get it together kind of stuff. But I project it on others and then I judge them. So just even in watching that YouTube, I was able to, like, I don't know, just really kind of check out, like, I have a little something in common with these really messed up people, right? These really evil forces. If I don't recognize that about myself, own it, and actually ultimately have compassion, you know, for the roots of this, then I'm just going to project it out in the world. And it, in my position, I could corral thousands of people to agree with me pointing that finger. All right. So that's why so much of my personal work and public work has been, that's why my second book is called Own Yourself. It's about this concept of, like, owning your shit, because otherwise we perpetuate the, you know, the dialectic, we perpetuate the illusion that there is anyone who can hurt you but yourself, and how we always have control over the narrative. And we almost always have a great degree of choice, you know, that we can exercise, even if it's in small ways, or our choice is simply around the story that we're telling ourselves in a moment.
Hold that thought. Guys, before we go any further, I want to tell you a little bit about a project that I recently launched called the Holistic Self-Assessment Online Course. Now, some of you know that I released this book, The Holistic Self-Assessment, in April 2018. And essentially, this book is the culmination of the experiences I had when I went to prison, dealing with addiction, dealing with depression, and suicide attempts. This is the process that I took myself through to get to know who I am, to get to know my principles, to get to align my relationships, my words, my thoughts, and actions with those principles. Overall, it's meant to be a self-empowerment, self-help guide that can help you start accomplishing your goals by aligning your principles with your actions. The book is available to download for free, and I'll include that link below. But if you're interested, I did recently launch a new online course, which you can find on the University of Reason, aka Autonomy. I partnered with them recently, and they created this whole online course for me. It's 9 weeks long. You can watch and follow along and read the book as I go through each chapter. I read it with you, and I offer some tips and some exercises. There are two different options. You can either do DIY, where you just go through the 9-week course yourself, or if you want to have personal one-on-one sessions with me, there's also an option for that. So check that out, guys. I'll include both links below. Let's get back to the podcast.
You know, I think it's so important to recognize, as you were just hinting at there, that what we see in, you know, the various people we point our fingers at, Gates, Rockefellers, whatever corporations, governments we want to point to, that it is important for us to see ourselves, or at least maybe hints of ourselves in these folks, because I truly do believe, and I've had this kind of exercise with myself, that, you know, I consider it to be what I call, like, the internal tyrant, the part of me that maybe, like you said, can kind of look at these things and see, wow, like, I see a little bit of a potential, a little bit of myself in there if I was to maybe take a different path in life. And I think that that empathy and compassion for these people, because, you know, whether we're, you know, people believe they're Luciferian, they're non-human, whatever, you know, path you want to go down, the point is that there's definitely trauma, there's definitely damage, and I would say a life that is not satisfied, because people who are content with themselves and happy and satisfied don't go around and, like, poke and prod and pick at other people and judge and kind of, like, try to use their power to control them. I just don't see a happy person doing that. But it still is important, as you said, to see, like, well, maybe sometimes I have these almost eugenicist type tendencies in my thinking. And I've had to do that with myself as well and recognize, like, okay, you know, if we're not careful in this struggle for sovereignty and self-ownership and freedom in all these various venues, then we can contribute to this sort of recycling, right? Revolution, the root is revolve. So if we aren't careful, we will revolve. We will, you know, just maybe fight this battle, and then we become the new tyrants, the people who allow ourselves to kind of be put in those positions where the worst parts of ourselves come out. And, you know, I think about that often. I don't know if there's ever going to be a truly, like, this is our moment of truth to, as a human, you know, as a human species, to evolve to the next level of whatever, you know, how some folks think we're going to have that moment. Perhaps there will be. But what I think about is, when you look at the videos, just as an example of what happened with Gaddafi and what happened with Saddam Hussein and plenty of other people who were attacked by their own people, whenever these people looked at them and they said, this person, in their mind, this person was responsible for all the wrongdoing they could think of. This person was, you know, the entity of, you know, the kind of representation of pure evil. And in the case of Saddam, he got hung. In the case of Gaddafi, his people basically raped him on the streets. You know, they sodomized him in the streets. And these people allowed themselves in those moments to have that anger, that fear, and kind of take it out on this one individual. And my point with saying that is I worry that if we don't have moments of empathy and compassion towards they, them, whoever, then we can go down dark paths and we can skip right past our healing and maybe to a better place into a totally darker place. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly what I wrestle with, because the spiritual bypass realm is to say things like, oh, but I want to respect everybody's, you know, preferences. And so I'm going to put on a mask just so they feel comfortable, even though I don't really believe in it. And I don't really want to wear one. Right. So there is, of course, a complexity here that if we don't embrace the complexity, we will end up, like you said, just recapitulating the same dynamics over and over again and flip-flopping from one side to the other. The necessity to understand that we are a meta-organism, right? Like, you poison the earth, you poison our life, you know? Like, and we have millions of people right now who are electively poisoning themselves on top of living in a poisoned ecosystem, on top of, you know, all of the contamination of their early childhood traumas and everything else. It's like, we're not going to be free without them. You know, it's tempting to imagine there's just going to be some segmentation of the human species and the cool people go this way and the sheep go that way. I don't know. I don't really see it going down like that. And I also believe that this is a moment for us to learn boundaries, right? So if we're kind of cells organizing into different organ tissues, right? And the liver cells go over there because they vibe, and the eyeball cells go over there. You know, we need to understand that cells have cell walls, right? I am, as a liver cell, different from a kidney cell. I must be, actually. So it's that paradox of connection and individuation, right? How can I actually, you know, have the ovaries to declare my truth to somebody I actually know disagrees with me, but to do it in a way that is not attached to their agreeing with me or changing their behavior because of what I've said, right? So we had friends early in the pandemic who invited us over for dinner. We hadn't seen them in a while, right? This is very early on. And they said, oh, you know what? Like, we're just social distancing, so we're not going to, like, hug you when you get here, and we're just going to set up the table, you know, so it's, like, a little spaced out. And Sayer and I were like, we're not coming, actually, then, you know, because it degrades my soul to interact with people I care about in a dehumanizing way. I understand your beliefs, but they're not compatible with ours. And so we're just going to have to be apart for now in a way that makes more sense, because there are so many of us who are shocked to learn that there could potentially be consequences to the virtuous choice of complying with the recommendations of precaution and safety. Now, there are consequences, that many of which have probably been engineered just this way, right? But there are consequences to, you know, making the virtuous choice of supporting the dominant narrative, because there are many people who actually, you know, take offense. Every time, you know, I have to look at a human face with a mask on it, it's uncomfortable for me, actually, right? So there's discomfort everywhere, and it's on all sides. But I do think that part of what we're being invited to step into is, I am separate. I do have different beliefs. What are my beliefs? How can I share them? But then also understanding that there are ways in which we are going to remain connected, whether we like it or not. And so what is that going to look like? Is it going to look like appeasement? That's what it used to look like. Everything's changing. So now connection may look like something totally different. And I don't know, that talking about solutions, I don't know that many of us have a good sense for how it is that we knit a society together when the foundational beliefs of, you know, the folks who comprise the society are antithetical. Right? If you believe that my body is going to contaminate yours just by existing, and I believe the same just by your existing, we got a problem, right? And there's no amount of plexiglass and social distancing that's going to really resolve that, right? Because one day we might find ourselves in a supermarket aisle right next to each other, reaching for the same box. And then what? So I'm fascinated, you know, to just play the sort of tape in my head a couple different ways to see how this could sort itself out, but I really have no idea.
Yeah, I've been referring to this in my mind. I have this video idea I've been kind of percolating on. I'm just calling the fracturing, and it's related to what you're describing, because I really do think that there's multi layers here where our reality and the way we live our lives and the way we view our health are just, like you said, we're living in totally different worlds at this point. And I think it's happening in different arenas, but it's something I've noticed. And like you said, it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. I want to move in just a moment to your work on, I believe it was called, you know, Thank You Body, that you and Sai are working on, because I think that's pretty related to everything you've been hinting at today. But before we do that, you mentioned earlier about the, you know, the injected versus the uninjected, and so like how there's these concerns about shedding, you know, from the vaccine, just the concern about what might happen if there's a person who has gone and got, you know, an injection and someone who hasn't. Could you speak a little bit about how you think maybe some of that, those fears, it seemed like you were saying maybe those fears are being, they're not warranted, or maybe they're taken out of context, or maybe they're exaggerated. Just your thoughts on that?
Yeah, just briefly, you know, I don't think we really know is unfortunately the answer, probably almost always the answer. But in the Pfizer emergency use authorization documentation, like actual Pfizer document, you know, you can find online or on my Telegram channel, you can see that it is documented that a study variable is considered to be the exposure of expectant women, so let's say in their pregnant cohort, to someone who has been injected through skin-to-skin contact or inhaled, like shared air, let's say, or coughing or sneezing, that kind of thing. This is a powerful admission, right? And remember that in the so-called live virus vaccine realm that has been, you know, existent for several decades now, you know, if you were in an intensive care unit, there's a sign outside the door that says if you recently received the varicella or MMR vaccine or whatever, you can't come in for 2 weeks, right? So it's already a scientific meme in the vaccinology world that shedding is such a thing, right? And so, you know, when I used to believe in germ theory, I thought, well, that's how and why there are outbreaks in fully vaccinated communities, you know, because they're still circulating these entities. Or that's why, you know, somebody who is not vaccinated can actually get sick with something that somebody who is vaccinated just got vaccinated for. I think we're really being asked to engage a little more nuance at this point. And, you know, there are many, Sayer's actually been talking about and researching exosomes. It's even in his book for years and years and years, to the point where there was a time in our relationship where I was like, okay, there are two words I do not want to hear ever again, exosome and melanin, because he was really into like researching the role of melanin in biological energy production as an alternative, you know, source of cellular energy, et cetera. And it just gets really, really into things. And he's been talking about this for a while. And in the end, this, you know, I even wrote about it in my second book, like the distinction between what we call a virus and what is an exosome is very, very murky, right? So could it be that there are, you know, genetically engineered particles, fragments that are being packaged up into these vesicles called exosomes or whatever they might be, that are transferring from body to body? Because that's potentially happening all the time anyway, in the same way that, you know, tree roots communicate in the soil about, you know, warnings and dangers. And it's a little message maybe that we, you know, might receive from our spouse or our friend or somebody we just gave a hug to or whatever about a warning, right? And the way that your body might offload a cellular burden of toxicity is through what we call symptoms. Right? Because if you think about symptoms, whether it's throwing up or sweating or coughing or sneezing or diarrhea, these are all modes of cellular disburdening of detox, right? And there are many different perspectives. I'm actually a big fan of the German New Medicine perspective, all of which that say the body is already healing. It's already healing. There's nothing to worry about, right? So when by the time you see symptoms, it's all good. Just support your body in its process. But the theory is that potentially there is something being transmitted in terms of, you know, this genetic fragment, whether it's the spike protein that's inducing antibodies that are cross-reacting with pre-existing tissues in our body, including in our reproductive system and circulatory system. That's some of the theory. You know, my friend Larry Pilevsky has been talking about I don't even know. I think it could be even way weirder, you know, like radiation. You know, these have to be, these biologicals have to be cooled at an unprecedented temperature, for example. I have no idea. I don't know that anybody knows, but it, they want us to know about this. They want us to be thinking about this. And I do believe that's why, you know, anything that trends on social media, it trends for a reason. It trends for a reason. And so that's not to say, you know, I had a girlfriend here the other day who didn't know about any of this stuff. She doesn't follow this kind of, you know, scientific mumbo jumbo. And she told me that she's a dentist, and she was in the office in a, with a bunch of her conventional colleagues. And she developed cramps so severe that for like 6 hours, she was out of commission, out of nowhere, right? Like menstrual cramps. And I told her about this, and she was floored because she couldn't otherwise explain it. So I do believe that there are these, you know, potentially seeded stories about things like decidual casts being passed by women, miscarriage, you know, total derailment of their reproductive functioning. And then there's a fear that comes with that. And then there's potentially a role that that fear plays in growing this field of real experiences, you know, because I am not one to dismiss women's voices. That's been done in the vaccine injury world for decades. So I do believe something is going on. And I believe that it's been engineered this way, and that we, if you really believe in the body, so to dovetail, you know, to the Thank You Body rally, there are many of us who really believe that the body does not make mistakes, right? And that, you know, even things like we've been conditioned by functional medicine or integrative medicine, you know, to say, oh, well, autoimmune disease is your body attacking itself, making a mistake. No, there's actually whole other scientific explanations that are consistent with it being a wise response to what you're exposing the body to. It's not a mistake. The body does not make mistakes. There's no such thing as a body mistake. So you, if you look through that lens, then you see, okay, all my symptoms are there for a reason. It's what my body needs to be doing right now. How can I learn the dialect of my symptoms? How can I decode that? Because I'm the only one who can. There's no doctor who can do that for you. There's no one who can, you know, substitute for your inner journey towards the core of your selfhood that is expressed through your body. And so, you know, we decided after about what, like 9 months of being in the righteous, angry activist mode, you know, to create this event, much like the Greater Reset, which I watched every minute. I absolutely love this event because it gives me the same feeling that our rally did. It ended up being in like 86 locations on 6 continents. And it was just an idea we had, like, let's get together and celebrate recovery, healing, celebrate like the stories that conventional medicine says shouldn't exist. And that's, you know, also what I've dedicated my work to for the past, I don't know, 5 or so years, is I'm done, you know, sounding the alarm about pharma. If you don't understand what the nature of pharma is and how it has nothing to do with your wellness, they owe you nothing. It's a business, okay? And a nefarious one, you know, with criminal felony charges that supersede probably any other corporate, you know, dispute that's ever been handled in the courts. So if you don't get that at this point, the information's out there, then, you know, go forth, you know, with your choices. So I wanted to focus on the solutions and the outcomes, because I do believe that it's important to know what is possible. So I've had an entire team of clinical volunteers. We've been publishing case reports, case series. We even did a randomized trial just so that people know, yeah, you can heal from Graves' disease without removing your thyroid. You know, you can heal from 18 years of lupus. You can heal from intractable migraines. You can heal from recidivistic schizophrenia that was euthanasia bound. You can heal from state hospital, you know, bound suicidal depression with psychosis. You can heal any of these things. Here's the proof. If one person can do it, it's possible for you as well. If you don't know that it's possible, then you're likely going to collapse into that fear space of delimited expectations for yourself, helplessness, fear, and then collude with the system, with your own, you know, potential self-violation, telling yourself you had no choice. No, you have a choice. You always have a choice. So make the choice from a place of empowerment and awareness that we can heal. And when we come together and we celebrate that fact, I think it's exactly the vibration of gratitude that is the most disruptive to the thought forms that are out there, the fear resonance that is out there around the human body.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that. And, you know, you have such a brilliant mind and so much to share. I really want to make sure that our audience, again, she is speaking with many other great speakers at the end of this month, at the end of May, as part of the Greater Reset, the second Greater Reset. We're trying to do things even bigger, and we've got some more exciting announcements to bring to that. And I look forward to what you share. But let's make sure everybody can find you. You know, again, we mentioned earlier, there's an effort to remove you and your work from the internet and from, you know, these platforms. So where can people go to get plugged in, you know, your websites, and then any of the other projects you have that people can check out?
All right, cool. Yeah, you won't find me on Google. You won't find me on Facebook. And Instagram is like a, it's like a strange and interesting that I'm still technically there, but it's very, very limited access account. So I'm really focusing on Telegram with the awareness that, you know, it could go south at any moment. So I'm at kellybroganmd.com, and we're really focusing on keeping in touch with people through our free newsletter.
Well, thank you so much, Kelly, for joining. I appreciate you just sharing all your wisdom. Like I said, you have a brilliant mind, and I feel like I learn every time I listen to you, you know, speaking to you or just listening to you talk with others. So I look forward to what you have to share. And I want to invite the audience again to reflect on the various little nuggets of wisdom that Kelly has shared with us today. The whole goal of this podcast of the activation is to get activated. So don't just be a passive listener and consume this information, but really think about it and reflect on how you can incorporate some of this information and some of the call for discernment and critical thinking of your own beliefs and the beliefs that are being put before us. And finally, I think the message of gratitude that you mentioned is of utmost importance, because being able to wake up every day despite everything we see going on and still feel thankful, still be grateful for what we have, and still push forward to accomplish your goals and to empower yourself mentally, physically, spiritually. I think that is a great tool for fighting back against these various systems that we're dealing with. So I want to say thank you again. And everybody, please check out Kelly's website. Remember to thank your body. And as always, remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free. Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Activation Podcast, brought to you by the Conscious Resistance Network. You can find our podcast on Spotify, on Pinecast, and most podcast downloading sites. If you want to find more about our work, please look at theconsciousresistance.com, where you can find the full archive of shows. Thank you.